unfortunately, we can't put a gun in someone's head and say buy, right? So like we can talk about having systems for sales and everything else all we want, but at the end of the day, what it really was for me, and the best way I've heard it put, is it's a way of increasing your luck surface area. Yep. So if you think about it, like you have, say you have 10 customers, 10 clients, there's only so much random potential of those 10 potentially activating, right? But when you do what we did, and we eventually had 3,000 people just here in Southeast Virginia in our audience, on our list and so on, that increased, like we never had 3,000 consulting clients ever, yep. anything close to that, right? But we had a lot of people who...
You had 3,000 sales agents.
Exactly, right.
This is The Gently Mad, a show where I talk to and pick the brains of the smartest people running creative online businesses. Actually, not so much. If you're looking for that inspirational kick in the pants to help take your life and career to the next level, then this is probably not the place for you. To be perfectly honest, this podcast is about me. Hey, I'm Adam Clark, and I'm your host. Thanks for listening. I do talk to people on this show, but instead of that double rainbow of success BS that you'll get in most entrepreneurial shows, we talk about failure, self-doubt, and all the insecurities that we all have that keep us from doing much of anything with our lives. If that sounds like your kind of thing, then head over to avclark.com/TGM and subscribe. Any actionable advice or helpful tips are simply a byproduct and purely unintentional. What's up, guys? I know that was pretty. I was pretty low. I was an emotional. Let's just start that over. What is up, my friends? Welcome to the Gently Mad. This is Adam Clark. I'm your host. Thanks for listening. Is that better? Is that you know? You happier now? I don't know. I feel like I need to always kind of pump my whatever. I can't even talk today. I need to pump up my voice with elevated emotion because I'm an existential downer, guys. Seriously, I am a cup of existential cold water that pours onto everything positive and good in life. All right? Fuck. Seriously. I mean. Oh my goodness. It's, you know, I'm just going through one of those periods, but when haven't I, honestly? I mean, those of you who have been with me for the long haul, the years of doing this, I mean, when haven't I? Let's be serious. But I feel like I'm coming out of it. I've got Brennan Dunn on the show today, and Brennan, I've never talked to Brennan before. He's been a staple in the freelance biz, freelance world, if you will. He's famous for his double your freelancing book and course and PlanScope. You remember PlanScope, that project management software from back in the day? I mean, so he's been around a long time, and I have of course known of him and his work. But I'd never talked to him before, and I wanted to get him on the show, and it was, as you could tell from that little intro a minute ago, it was like a freaking sales masterclass. Now, I don't want you to think it was completely practical takeaways. You know I steer clear of anything, you know, practical and helpful to take away from in this show. I try to avoid that at all costs, but it was hard because Brennan has got so much knowledge, and it was just, I mean, if you are trying to run a business, if you're a freelancer, you know, if you're always wondering, like, how can I get in control of my clients and, like, not just be at the mercy of the email, you know, then this conversation is for you. I mean, it was like a sales masterclass. I even said that to him. I was like, you know, this was not what I expected, but it was great. It was super useful, and it wasn't all practical. For those of you like me and who like the nihilism and cynicism that I bring to your life, there's still some of that in there, definitely. I mean, how can there not be? Because it's me. But it was a great episode. Anyway, I'm trying. So Brennan's on the show, and we'll get to him in a minute. I'm trying not to be so existentially down, you know. I'm trying not to be a downer so much, guys. Seriously, it gets old. It gets old. I'm old, and the older I get, the less patience I have for cynicism. You know, I want to be earnest. I want to be a believer. I want to be someone who is positive. But it's just not really in my nature to be that way. You know, it's funny, like my angry face and happy face look almost identical. I mean, seriously, it's just who I am. But, it's been crazy time. Crazy, crazy period. I've got a conversation coming up soon with Morgan Haynes. If you don't know her, check out A Little Creative online. Awesome, awesome girl, woman. What's the terminology? I don't know. Now I'm going to be offending people. She's a great person. All right, let's just put it that way. We kind of went into the whole backstory. Okay, so we talked a lot about what's happened the last couple of years with Apple and all my miserable life shit and some of her miserable life shit too. So that episode will be coming up. That'll give you some of that. We didn't do any of that with Brennan today. This was all, good practical stuff, but I'm trying to get out of it. Okay. You know, it's, I'm not walking around with like in a Charlie Brown cartoon just with a little cloud of rain over my head all the time. That's not the way I live. I mean, I'm a normal guy. You know, I've got a family. I've got three little girls whom I love and a wife that I love, and everything is good. You know, it's all good. But there's always this part of me that is just like, is this it? You know, is this all there is? You know, and I feel terrible saying that because I have so much. I am a middle class, upper middle class, white male American. I have won it's not genetic, but I've essentially won the lottery with my birth, and I have all the benefits the world has to offer me that it doesn't offer to so many other people. So I feel terrible when I say things like, "Is this it?" But that's still something I struggle with all the time, is this feeling of, is this it? You know, is this what it's about? You know, because I am still trying to find the meaning and purpose behind it all, you know? And I'm getting too much into the Morgan Haynes conversation. This was the kind of stuff we talked about, and it was awesome. It went for 3 hours. I'm obviously not going to release that whole conversation, but hopefully we can edit that down into something listenable. But so I'm jumping the gun here, but it's been one of those weeks, you know, it's been one of those times where difficult things, difficult relationship stuff, difficult things in life. And, you want things and you don't get them. I know this is all super vague. Oh my goodness. I know that no one's even listening at this point. You have skipped ahead to the amazing conversation with Brennan. You're not even listening now. But anyway, it's just a weird stage of life, you know? And I'm in this ever eternal search for the meaning and purpose behind what I do. And I still haven't found it yet, but I will say this. I am enjoying my freelance work. It is picking up. I am getting clients. I need more. So if you need web stuff, definitely hit me up. But I'm enjoying it. It's going well. And it definitely is way better than sitting in an office for 8 hours a day that I hate. You know? Could be worse. That's what I'm trying to say. So I have one more thing before we get to Brennan. I've had several people go and leave reviews on the show, which, like I said last time, I really appreciate. It's so helpful. It helps other people find the show in iTunes. So if you wouldn't mind going into iTunes and searching for The Gently Mad, you'll see my head with a beanie, and it says big letters, The Gently Mad. Anyway, just search for that. It's pretty obvious. And leave me a review. I would love that. I hope that you get something from this. Okay, there was a review here from David Hopper, who is a new review. And he said, first time ever to listen. The topic for this relaunch completely grabbed my attention as I am going through a same time in my life. I really enjoy the conversation. I identify a lot with what was said at the very end where Adam wants there to be meaning behind what he does and everyone else thinks he's crazy. Hearing someone speak to these same issues was huge for me. Keep up the great work. Excuse me while I binge listen to all the past episodes. Well, thanks, David. That's awesome. I'm glad that you connected with it. That's what I hope for in this, is connecting to people on that level who feel the same way I do. And to you, David, and to everyone else out there who feels like I do, I just want you to know you're not alone. You're not a weirdo for always feeling like there's something missing and you're trying to find that thing in life. You know, you're not weird. There are others of us out there in the world who feel like you do. And I think we need a club. All right. We need our own club. It's probably would be more like an AA meeting than a club. But we need something. Right. Right. I think we do. Anyway, that's it. Let's get to, well, one last thing. Last thing, I promise. Sorry I missed last week. My goal is going to be to release these weekly, but last week was a bit of an off week. My mother had a mother. Look at me. I'm trying to be professional on this show. My mom had a surgery. It was a minor brain surgery, which, yeah, all brain surgeries, how is there a minor one? But among the brain surgeries that one could have, this was a fairly minor one. It just kind of took me away from the office the whole week. She's fine. She's recovering. Everything went well. Some of you knew about that. Thank you very much for your thoughts and prayers and that kind of stuff. Things went well and she's recovering. But my whole week was messed up last week. So I was not able to get this released. So I am aiming for weekly. And I hope I'm able to maintain that. So I love you guys. I really do. I want you to know that I really do. I'm each and every one of you who listens to this, and those of you who email me and leave me reviews. I love getting those things. I love talking with you. It's nice to know that I am not alone in my struggle, and I can only assume that it's nice for you too. Let's hope. One can hope, right? All right, enough of that. We're at the 10-minute mark. That's about as much rambling as anyone can handle for me is 10 minutes. So let's get to this conversation with Brennan Dunn. It was great. Get out your notebooks or whatever you want to take notes, because this was a good one. Seriously, if you're a freelancer especially, you're going to like it. And yeah, I'll see you on the other side.
So I moved from Infusionsoft to Drip, and one thing I liked about that was Infusionsoft had CRM, e-commerce, all that kind of stuff, right. Built into one, along with email marketing. And I am much more of the persuasion that let one tool do one thing really well, and hopefully it'll integrate seamlessly, whether it's directly or through like a Zapier, with everything else that you need. And I've just noticed that when one product tries to do way too much, even if they have a bigger team and all that other stuff. But I get from a marketing perspective, it's really nice, especially if you're going after people who might be lower sophistication, right?
Yeah.
So they want kind of full funnel, or not full funnel, but yeah, full funnel, start to finish, like webinar registration, pre-emails, post-emails, all that stuff. But those of us who know how to glue different bits of software together, we realize, well, I could just, have the email system I'm using do the emails, and I could, do registration through like a Unbounce or Instapage or something like that.
Yeah.
Why have all these different tools? Or I definitely have the different tools, but why have one tool that is kind of separate, but doing a lot of it's overriding what other tools could do that you're already using?
Yeah. Well, it would be nice to have, especially when it comes to paying for these tools, if there was just, the one tool that does everything. But I don't know. I always get nervous in that situation, because then I'm relying on one company for the whole chain. And if they decide to sell, or if they decide to stop, you know, if anything breaks down or changes, then my whole thing is screwed. So, you know, it's, yeah, I don't know, but I haven't really gotten into that whole, I know that you talk a lot about that, or at least you, I've seen some of your stuff about the whole, the funnel stuff and the webinars and like the sales funnels and all that stuff. I reached to that point in my product journey, and that's where I quit. So I got to the point where I had spent all this time making the thing and finished it, and by that point I was so stressed out and burned out, like the thought of now diving into all of the marketing and everything that would be just as hard as actually making the thing, I was just like, forget it. So I don't know. Maybe get back to it at some point, but I've never been able. And then that's one thing we should talk about at some point is I think for me, what the breakdown was is by the time I got to the end of it, I know you used to do web design and stuff, and I want to get into like your whole thing from where you started to, you know, where you are, what you're exactly doing now. But I mean, you know, as a designer, developer, like a creative product maker, you know, by the time you finish something is usually when you hate it the most, you know? Right. And, that was my biggest struggle is when I got to the end of making my podcast course, even though I had, pre-sold it and made a good bit of money, I'd funded the entire creation of the course, which was just, I wanted to see if I could do that. And I did it. But, by the time I got to the end of it, I was so burned out, and I felt I hated it so much that I couldn't bring myself to go on a webinar and like sell the shit out of this thing that at that point I felt like was total crap, you know? Mm-hmm. And, so I'd be really interested to hear your, if you've ever been in that situation and how you, you know, you just, you have to tell yourself it's not total crap. This is worth something, and you just have to suck it up and sell it anyway, because that's where you make your money, is when you start marketing and selling it, you know?
Yeah.
And, but that's where my hang up always is. Cause that's when I have the least confidence in the stuff that I make, is right when I finish it, because it's just been a long haul of work. And so then I don't feel good about selling it, you know?
Yeah. Right. Well, we could dive deep down that rabbit hole of, I don't know how much of that is potentially imposter syndrome. I don't know how much of that is just the, like, the fear of getting stuff out there potentially. Yeah. Right. I mean, I've seen that. I've experienced that myself, obviously, many, many times, pretty much anytime I watch anything.
Has it ever happened where you finished, I don't know, double your freelancing, but you finished something and that's when you felt like it was its least valuable because you were so burned out and just tired. But that's when you really have to step it up, because that's when you have to start selling it, or all the previous time's wasted, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what I've tried to do is, and this is something so with W freelancing, for instance, with a lot of the products that I do, I've tried to make an effort not to put too much stock into a big actual launch. One thing I got back when I was way back when I was doing a course put out by Amy Hoy back in 2011 called 30 by 500, and her big thing was you're basically launching anytime anyone new sees your stuff, right? So we put a lot of focus on launches, right? Like big launch, like work on the product and then launch it and so on. But what helped me with DYF has been, and I've done this for the last few products, has been making it so rather than doing like a lot of upfront build the perfect marketing funnel to a sales page and, you know, really putting in the calendar when we're going to open up enrollment and everything else, to start more conversationally where maybe just at the footer of weekly newsletters mention, hey, I'm working on a course on X. If you think you might be interested in hearing more about that and maybe, you know, potentially joining it, just drop me a reply. And then getting a lot of conversations going and learning a lot about what people are saying about, you know, specifically like, you know, what objections do they have, what drew them to, like, why do they care about X and all that sort of stuff. And really just selling more manually, but conversationally.
Yeah.
And then that made it so by the time I was ready to, let's say, do a proper launch, I mean, I was motivated because I already had success from selling that. So there was momentum. On top of that, the imposter stuff was a non-issue since I'd already successfully sold it, not right. pre-sold it, but actually sold it to people who got the product and so on. And then I could just take all that back and forth and distill it down into something more scalable. So I would take that discussion, that conversation that was a dialogue, and I would turn it into a monologue being, you know, marketing material, sales page copy, and so on. Yeah. So at that point, it wasn't like the weight of the world on me anymore. Instead, I'd done this before just individually a lot, you know, quite frequently. And then by the time it was ready for the list-wide launch or anything else, it didn't weigh on me as much, right?
Yeah. So it's, but I guess the key to that is that you are sending out, you know, the key to that is your list, and you are regularly in communication with your list, and you're, you know, that's the focus. And
Well, building in the open. I mean, with my new project now, I mean, it's a new audience. It's not really the Double Your Freelancing audience. And what we're doing with this is we're effectively starting in a way from scratch, mm-hmm. but by openly building over Twitter and email, because, you know, we're building up an early access list, and we're not doing the typical, you know, if you're interested, type in your email address, and then 6 months later, you get an email saying, hey, surprise, Right Message is now available. And you're like, what the hell is Right Message? And then it's like, oh, yeah, that thing from like last year. So by, you know, it's motivating for me to share as much as I can in the open, because it helps push me along, at least. And it's good because if you want to get technical, it keeps your audience warm. It keeps them aware. And on top of that, you're able to routinely engage in dialogue that helps you refine what it is you're doing. Because the big thing is, I mean, you know, it's funny. One of my early consulting clients was a former film producer. And he brought that attitude with him to building, you know, hiring me to do his website. And everything had to be perfect before he'd go live, because he took the approach of, you know, once a film's done, it's done.
Right.
Right. Like, you don't make iterative changes to a film that is in theaters.
Yeah.
So, but he brought that attitude, whereas that's not how it is for any of us. Right. Like, if you launch and it doesn't work, figure out why it didn't work. And it's usually not binary. It's usually not, it either worked or didn't work. It's maybe it didn't sell as much as I thought it would, or something like that. And you know, that's an opportunity to not say, okay, well, we had our chance and this obviously didn't work for me, so I'm going to just move on. Instead think, okay, for the people that, you know, if every interaction, every first interaction is a launch, for the, say, 10,000 people that were launched to, it didn't perform as optimally as possible. So I'm going to speak with a lot of them, try to figure out what objections they had. And that's why I do this all more individually at first, so I can have a better chance when I do cash in on, say, my audience, right?
Right.
And, you know, do that a bunch and then do it again, you know, find another, like, but the difference is I, a lot of people will write off, you know, whatever it is they were doing is either this doesn't work or it's not for me or something like that. Instead of just taking the attitude of, okay, this was buggy and those bugs meant that it didn't sell as much as I thought it would. So how do I solve this problem and do it again?
Yeah.
And what's helped me has not been the attitude of I'm going to go into my kind of hole and build something and hope that it works really well and launch it and then, you know, decompress from there and try it again. Instead, it's let's try to do as much that doesn't scale. So Skype calls, email back and forth and so on.
Yeah.
Really, you know, before any line of sales copy is written, do it that way manually. And then once you have an idea of like, what are the things people keep asking about? What are the pushbacks people keep having? Why aren't people buying? I mean, you're not, it's not like you're validating in the sense of saying, hey, do you like this? I mean, most people are generally going to say like they do because they don't want to hurt your feelings, even if they don't know you. Right. So what I would do is I'd be building a product, probably have it mostly built. I'd have a link to add to cart that is not public, but that would give them access to the product. And then I would try to sell it manually and then try to normalize all that sales back and forth into a actual marketing funnel that is set in stone, or at least somewhat set in stone, and, you know, go from there. And that's been, for me at least, that's been like a really big thing for me that's helped me pretty tremendously.
Yeah. Well, how does that, if you're building in public, how does that work with, like you said, you would, you'd have a hidden add to cart, you'd sell more manually. If you're building in public, then there's nothing to sell just yet, right?
Right. So like case in point, like, so with Right Message, what I'm doing now, I mean, we're screenshotting random bits of what we're doing, teaser little Google Docs I'll put together that are basic outlines. You know, little, it's not as much, it's just kind of using my Twitter stream as almost an accountability medium, mm-hmm. where I'm just trying to share as much as I can about kind of at least what I'm doing on the product. And that's what we're doing, is we're just trying to make it so we're not doing the approach. This is the approach I did with PlanScope years ago, which was,
yeah,
I'm going to go and build something and put together a little interest list. And then hopefully people will opt into that. And then when it's ready, I'll go and I'll be like, oh, you know, it's available. Come join or buy or whatever else. And that didn't work too well. So yeah. What we're finding now is we're building up a lot of, in a way, pent up demand.
Yeah.
By openly sharing pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I mean, and it doesn't hurt. It only helps. So, but it's good for, I mean, it's good for the potential buyer, because it's, you know, it gives them those multiple touch points that help them see, okay, I can get behind this. I'm really interested in this. But it also is good for us, because it allows us to not, it's demotivating, I think, to work in a vacuum. But yeah. I think it's more comfortable for a lot of us to work in a vacuum. But for me, it's with, you know, some people might see it as almost reckless in a way, but by sharing as much as I can in the open, it's never hurt me. I mean, I really do think that a lot of, for instance, the early success we've gotten with Right Message, which we haven't done much for intentional marketing, has been for a while, even with what I was doing before Right Message, I'd just be sharing random bits on Twitter about personalization and results I'd get on my own stuff. And, yeah. you know, that kind of built up interest prior to there being the ability to even, you know, buy a solution to, or buy more of an accessible solution to what I was talking about.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. I'll tell you where one thing I've been thinking about a lot lately is, I assumed that the reason I made a podcasting course, obviously, you know, everyone who has a podcast practically makes a podcasting course, but I was genuinely, you know, I love podcasting and I geek out about all the nerdy aspects of it and mics and setups and, you know, and even the whys and the deeper questions, like, why are you doing this? And trying to figure out, you know, how is it serving you? Like, what are you trying to accomplish by doing this podcast and beyond just potentially making money or whatever? And I pre-sold the course, cause I wanted to see if I could fund the creation of it rather than spend the next 3 months making something and then have no idea. And, that worked surprisingly well. But then I got to the end of it and then I have literally sold, you know, a handful since then. But also I haven't done any marketing on it since then. And whenever there's like a spike of traffic, like whenever someone mentions it or you know, it pops up on some new place and you know, people land on the page, I always get like a you know, sort of a rush of sales and the feedback's good. So I know that like people like it, and when they see it, they buy it. The trick is, you know, I just got to get more people to see it, you know. And so that's the part of the puzzle where I'm, you know, it feels overwhelming to be like, well, man, I don't know. I don't want to go buy a course and go through how to do webinars and how to do SEO and Facebook ads and, you know, Facebook pixels and all this stuff. But maybe that's just what it takes to get your stuff seen. I mean, would you say it is?
I mean, I would say yes. I mean, yes and no. I think a lot of us want kind of that silver, silver bullet of, well, maybe if I could just buy qualified traffic, that would help. Or if I could just do this or do that. I think the thing, so case in point with, not to dig too much into it, but what's interesting about, for me at least, with Right Message has been, with what I've done over the last 4 or 5 years with W Freelancing, it's been relatively easier to launch new products because I already had that audience, right? So right. there's survivorship bias and all that, right?
Yep.
But what I've done with the growth strategy that we're putting together with the Right Message has been, this is largely a new audience. I mean, there could be some, in a Venn diagram, some overlap between
right.
DYF and Right Message. But what we're realizing is that if we're just targeting people actively looking for personalization software, we're going to lose. And that was the issue I had with PlanScope. If I just targeted people looking for project management software for freelancers, we're mm-hmm. going to lose because the volume is low. If you think about it in terms of like, think of it, I mean, I know we're not visual, but think of like, imagine me holding up my fingers in a very small circle. That's the amount of people who are saying, I want to learn how to be an awesome podcaster.
Right.
I'm going to search for courses on podcasting, right?
Yep.
That's a small number of people. And by the time somebody in a way self-qualifies himself to get to that end stage of that funnel, there's quite a few people who could be there, but are not there. So what I look at is, how can you step back? Because if everyone has some sort of, like, no one generally wants a podcast for the sake of it being a podcast. There's some right. underlying goal, right? So for instance, let's say that somebody is an author and wants to be, get their books bought or something like that and right. get some awareness and so on. What the typical life cycle would be that would get them to starting a podcast would be something along the lines of, I'm an author. I have a book, or I'm releasing a book, and I maybe read some article that talked about podcasting, or maybe I listened to podcasts and I found these podcasts because I opened up iTunes, clicked on the podcast thing, browsed some stuff, found something, subscribed, listened. And then, so there's that awareness aspect, right? And so they had to become aware that podcasting was a thing. And then the next right. thing was that podcasting is something they can do, which is, again, that's probably something like, if you're listening to podcasts from NPR and things like that, you're probably going to think, it's like, I wouldn't think that I'm going to make a documentary.
Right.
I might not think I would make a podcast. That's kind of that next stage. And then the next bit is, well, how do I do that? Well, maybe going out and finding a course maybe somebody's made on podcasting. And, if you think about this as a funnel of the need down to the implementation vehicle, which would be a podcast, let's say, the need being become a popular author, and then everything downstream from that. Very few people make it, it's like salmon going upstream, right? Like, very few people make it to the end of that funnel.
Right.
So if you're only going after those people, volume is relatively small, if you think about it, right? Compared to the number of people who could benefit. But if you're only marketing, I'm going to help you make a podcast, or I'm going to help you with podcasting, I think there's other things you might be able to do lead magnet wise that would get people who are more demographically the right fit, like authors or course creators or people who are bloggers or something like that, where you're basically you're intercepting them wherever they happen to be, blogs they read, or maybe even going on podcasts they listen to, mm-hmm. and then going on and talking about how podcasting is accessible to everyone or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And then going from that angle instead of reactively waiting. It's a bit like, where that kind of funnel example came from is when I used to do a lot of teaching for freelancers, and I would talk to them about things like, if you're a web designer and you're just waiting for clients to come to you and say, hey, I need web design. You're a web designer. Can we work together and let's talk? You're kind of at that point. I mean, you're at the mercy
of the email, if it doesn't show up, you're screwed.
And And at that point, you're kind of in a way, they already know what they need. You're commoditized in a way, and they're going to be price shopping and so on. But what worked for us as an agency was going back and saying, well, how do we intercept demographically the right people? And like, we would do training on, so we were a web development company, but we would do training on things like, what do you do when you get to hit the upper bounds of Microsoft Excel, which does not seem like something that a web development company might do. But these are companies that are using Excel to operate core parts of their business. They did not know that you can even build a web app unless you're like some massively funded company or like a Microsoft or something like that, right?
Right.
They thought it was outside of reach. and they didn't even know where to begin. They didn't know the terrain. They didn't know the language, and it was intimidating. And, you know, there was a lot of resistance, internal resistance, and even, you know, any of that. So the ones who actually made it through that funnel and got to the point saying, I need to hire a web developer, that's a very, there's relatively few people who survived that funnel,
right?
Compared to the number of people we could actually help. So that's why we started with doing things like Excel, right? Which doesn't seem like anything that a web development company should be focused on from like a marketing perspective, but it worked really well for us. And for that reason, because we would get people who were struggling, who had a problem, who the problem was Excel is limiting in a big way. And maybe it's something like there's no audit trail, there's no history, there's no, you know, notification system built in like a web app might have. And they didn't know they needed that. And we would go in and talk to them about what's like, does it make sense to use this off the shelf thing continuously, or should you look into building something custom? And they wouldn't even know that custom was a an option for them. So that's kind of the approach I've tried to take with a lot of this. Is my big thing is I'm targeting, like freelancing, targeting people who self-identify as freelancers, but I don't want them thinking that they're freelancers long term. And that's where when people say like, oh, you know, you're talking about business consulting, why is freelancing in your website name? Because I'm trying to get people who identify as that, and then let them, you know, kind of go lead them down to becoming kind of the, I need to, in a way, I guess to sum it up, it's our job to prepare people to buy, become a customer.
Right.
So it's your job to prepare somebody to be a customer of your podcasting course. What does that mean? Like when you meet somebody who is a good fit, how can you help them become a good customer?
Well, part of it, I think, when I was listening to you say all that, is that it's like we assume that everyone kind of knows what we know, you know? I mean, we know that they're not, you know, we're the expert in what we're selling and they don't have that skill, but, you know, we assume that, you know, and I think that's just as humans, when we kind of generally interact with the world around us, you know, our default bias is to assume that most people have our similar understanding of the world, you know, and when it comes to business, you know, it's like, oh, really? What? There's someone out there who doesn't know that a WordPress site could much more easily solve this problem. Like everyone knows that, you know, and sometimes it's hard to get into that mindset of like, well, this is obvious. Why would I talk about this? Because this is just obvious, you know, but it's not obvious to everyone. And just two quick follow-up questions to that, because that was super, I think that was like the most practical 5 minutes ever on this show of like a sales technique, because that's great. But just a little follow-up is, how did you decide on Excel, for example, as your topic? And two, when you say you were doing these workshops, like, were you just writing blog posts about this, or were you actually doing webinars or in-person courses? Like, where were you getting the audience? How did you decide on the topic of Excel, the content, and then where did you find the audience to deliver that content to?
So, good question. So, okay. So what was interesting was my agency was mostly an offline business, meaning we didn't really do them a lot with any online. Like, we never did webinars or anything like that. But what we did was, we would go to places that had, again, the right kind of people, not people looking actively for companies like us to work with, but the right fit of people. And for us, that would be local networking events, which every city has these, right?
Right.
And usually every single night of the week, probably. And so we would go to these. And at first, my letdown was the attitude, and this is the attitude I think a lot of us have, even online, which is, I'm going to an event. My goal is to walk away with the client, right? And when I had that attitude and I wasn't, quote unquote, converting, I almost wrote off the whole idea of in-person networking.
Right.
But what was interesting was I had a few people that I knew locally who were pretty seasoned at this thing, right, at doing this kind of stuff. And their best advice was, don't go there to convert. Go there to listen. So you asked, where did the idea of the Excel workshop, for instance, come from? That would, you know, what I would do is I would just go and I, you know, say you and I met at a networking event or at a conference or something like that. I would ask you a bit about, so, you know, Adam, tell me a bit about what you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just talked to them and asked them specifically, tell me a bit about, like, so, you know, what role does technology have in your business? And that's where Excel would come up, or Microsoft Access or something like that. And they'd tell me a bit about off the shelf stuff they were doing. And I'd ask them specifically, well, what sucks about it? And, you know, a lot of that led to, for instance, Excel being a viable thing that a lot of these people here were using it. It's all they knew. And they didn't know, you know, when they'd ask about what we did. And I would say, well, we build web apps. That went over their head. I mean, they thought we were building, you know, Facebook, it like the Facebooks of the world, which yep. There was some truth in that. Like, we were helping that kind of company, those kind of high growth startup types who would come to us. But we were also helping people with, you know, basically back office software, like custom software yeah. for them, right? But they didn't know that was a thing. So, you know, that helped. And what was really interesting that we started doing was, this wasn't something we did early on, but if you think about what happens online, so somebody asks Google a question, let's say, and then they find an article of yours potentially, or they're linked to it from social, like Twitter or something, right?
Yeah.
We have call to actions at the end, right? And the goal there is to get somebody on our list, because the idea is if they're on your list, then you can send them emails over time and maybe they'll become a customer. So the usual call to action at a networking event is to do this ritualistic business card exchange mm-hmm. where, you know, here's my card. Great. Cool. But one thing we started doing was we would tell them, hey, we're actually organizing a little group of people who care about the intersection of technology and business here in Norfolk, Virginia. Is that something you'd be interested in joining? You know, this is a free little group we're putting together. And the type who go to networking events love groups. They love that kind of stuff, right? So yeah. Basically 100% opt-in rate, which you don't get online, but right. You get all the time in person, right? So we did that to kind of build this smallish group. But we would also do things like, for instance, there would be meetup groups locally that were, you know, quote unquote entrepreneur meetup groups. There's also Chamber of Commerce have like a, you know, their own little events and so on. And I remember approaching the person I knew at the Chamber of Commerce and saying, hey, I've talked to a lot of people at some of the actual events that they run, like these networking events. It seems like a lot of them are, you know, they're using Excel, but they're kind of getting frustrated with it. And they are looking for a better kind of solution, but they don't know what to do. And that's something actually that my company, what we do is we help people with that exact thing.
Yeah.
Would you be interested in me presenting to your audience a seminar, like an in-person thing about, you know, if I put something together, is that something you guys would be open to? And they were open to that. And, again, back then I knew nothing about like email marketing or any of that stuff. But one thing I did do is I had enough sense to sign up for a MailChimp account back in the day. And I would just build a little contact form. And I did this talk in front of, I think it was like 80 people at part of this education series mm-hmm. at the Chamber of Commerce. And like 50 of them ended up at the end. I just said, if you want more info about what I've just talked about, I'm going to send out some more emails that like provide links and like more details about what I could cover briefly up, you know, in front of you. I got like 50 people from that who put in their email address. So if you think about it, it's kind of like, you know, why do we guest post? Why do we go on other people's podcasts? It's because they already have an audience, right?
Right.
And our goal is to, in a way, increase our own reach, let's say, or yeah. Used to call it siphoning off their audience into part of ours, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. That's what we would do. Because, you know, we'd go and build up this list of people that we would do manually through networking. So we'd go to an event, might be 60 people there. A lot of them are kind of repeat types, but right. For the most part, we'd walk away with like four or five people who were like, yeah, I'd love to, you know, be a part of this group you're building or something like that, right? And these are, I mean, it's different. Like the kind of people who randomly read an article of yours that you put on your blog versus somebody you had a 5-minute conversation with. Much different quality, much different caliber yeah. of a person, right?
Yeah.
So that was our whole strategy, is we would do that. And then we got a little more refined where we just keep repeating these same, like the Excel thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
We do that once every 2 months. We then did a little Shark Tanky type thing also that we did a few times where we got to know local angel investors and we'd bring them in. And then we bring in companies or people who had a startup-y idea. And it's not like that helped us necessarily. It just kind of put a center of attention in a lot of ways, but that slowly grew. But what was really interesting was this whole model of you meet somebody and then you find a way to help them in some way. So provide value is kind of the internet marketing way of saying that, right? And then you have a call to action, which is usually a business card exchange, which goes in a shoebox or something like that, never touched. But instead, I was, you know, at first it was more of this informal thing. Later became a, hey, we do a lot of events. Would you mind if I send you some info on future events that we're hosting? Then we would do like the Excel thing, right? Yeah. So we do the Excel seminar. Again, my email marketing knowledge was very low tech at that point. Yeah. So what we would do is we do this event. Let's say we did it in September. And then I would just send a few follow-up emails that were pretty templated afterwards saying like, you know, diving deeper into things. And then I'd send an email saying, hey, hopefully you learned a lot both at the event and over the last few weeks as I sent these emails to you. Our goal as somebody who kind of did a lot of teaching in terms of this Excel stuff is that you actually do something with it. Like you don't just say, okay, this is interesting to hear, back to normal. Like what drew you to the event was something was wrong. We'd love to jump on a quick call and just talk about like what your goals are and like what specifically for you, what sucks about Excel and what do you think you stand to make if you could fix that? And that's how we generated sales calls. Like that system, that more or less repeatable system that over time now with DYF, I've got very dialed in, pretty advanced personalized automation that is doing the same sort of stuff, just on a more, if you will, global scale, where with the agency, it was more high touch type stuff, right? So,
well, that's what I was going to say. Model, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that whole model is just transitioned from like low sophistication, high touch to high sophistication, low touch. But it's the same thing,
right,
for the most part. I'm intercepting people to intercept them with what they're looking for. And then I'm preparing them to become a customer, largely through automated ways now. Right. But in the past, I used to do it through these kind of live webinars, AKA seminar, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing I was going to say is, I wonder how, well, obviously it was repeatable because you did it, but, and maybe because I've never done something like that, my, vision is limited, but it would seem like, you know, I am familiar with the local groups. I get pitched to be part of these groups, you know, things like that. And it's always the same people. And it's, so it's like, I wonder like, how did you manage to, you know, it would seem like you'd run out of people. Cause like you said, a lot of these groups are filled with the same people, you know? And so, if you just kept repeating this process over and over again,
diminishing returns, right?
Yeah, it would seem to me like you would, the in-person, while that is a very higher touch, much warmer lead, it seems like the first time might be great, the second time might be okay, but after a couple of times, you've pretty much reached all the people that come to these kind of groups, you know?
Yeah, so it wasn't about volume necessarily. I mean, we did get a decent volume locally, but what it really was about getting over-delivering on value. So what we realized was most of our clients, even though we had that kind of funnel of helping people and so on, they didn't come directly from that audience. They came via referral from that audience.
Right.
So
okay. Yeah.
Like for instance, we worked with a few Fortune 500s and we actually worked with a presidential candidate who I won't name back in 2012, but in 2011 for the 2012 campaign. But we didn't have any direct connection to these people. Right.
Yeah.
What we did was we realized that if we can, like, why do past clients refer customers to us or new clients to us?
Yeah.
It's because they got something of value from us and that they trust our ability to deliver. And the only way for most people to scale that is to get more clients or customers, which isn't fast.
Right.
But if there's ways that you could deliver that same equation of, I have given you something of value that has benefited you positively and you understand and you attribute that to, say, us, then that same formula is still in effect.
Yeah.
Right. So it's that same thing where we would just do that and we would effectively get overrun with inbound referrals, not from people who were past customers
in the
of
meeting,
ours.
Yeah.
I mean, we would get those, but we would also get it from people who'd never paid us a dime, but who became almost like sleeper agents for us in the field.
Yeah.
Right. And that worked well. But the other thing we did is we did try to kind of branch out. I remember I went to a banking conference in Atlanta that I was usually going to technical conferences that I was comfortable at, but this is a way to go to something entirely new of bankers and venture capitalists and so on. And I would, you know, do the same tactics that I do locally, but just there.
Yeah.
And that helped. I mean, it's that kind of, and this is the pushback I'd get from my team was, how does what you're doing now actually give, you know, like you're wasting time. Like, why are you going to a banking conference? Right. But what I didn't really, it wasn't as clear as it is now, then, but what I was doing was effectively going and planting a lot of seeds and putting into place different systems that would nurture the seeds.
Yeah.
So, you know, for instance, we were just using a very broadcast based MailChimp list, and we would just advertise what we were doing. Like, one thing we would do is when we shipped a project, if we if we had a local client, we'd ship it. What we would do is we would invite everyone to our office. And if you don't have an office, it could be like a bar. And we would bring our client in, and we would first rounds on us, and we would just basically have a little party celebrating this new thing we just brought to life, right? With the client there. And in a way, I wasn't treating it as a psychological thing yet, but when I look back thinking about it, everyone there wanted to be in that person's shoes. It's like they just shipped something new. And so we would do that, and we would do these little launch parties that, you know, we had a client in Ohio once who we just paid for them to come here so that they could come to that thing. Like, probably the best money we ever spent in terms of the long-term benefit we got from that. But it was just these kind of things where, and it seems probably overwhelming, but what I would say is just look for it. You don't need to get to that scale. You don't need to do anything close to the amount of random. I mean, we had a team of 11. We could do a bit more,
right?
But that also meant we had a very high overhead. That meant we had to bring in a lot of clients to make it work. But So I mean, I would look at things like, you know, say you're selling online. Why did this formula work? We intercepted people where they naturally were, and we would not go and say, oh, you know, not expect them. So in your case, like if they're not actually looking for a podcasting course because they haven't even thought about podcasting as a thing, you might even, you know, talk to them. When I say talk, I mean like whether it's an article or a podcast episode you do or something
right,
like that about, you know, what are some ways that you can get, like more sales or something like that. And then maybe over time, educate them about how podcasting might be a way to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, one person I think who does this really well is actually the guy who sold my first SaaS, Thomas Smale. And what he does is he's a broker, right? Mm-hmm. So he's a SaaS broker. He sells companies, but he's everywhere. He's writing guest posts and everything else about things on like bringing your company to the next level or what to like when determining what next feature to add to your SaaS. He realizes no one's going to read that and be like, oh, you know, time to sell. Like, he's not focused on what his product is. Instead, what he's doing is he's building up really influence and authority in the SaaS world so that whenever anyone asks me now about, you know, I have a question about valuing my company or I'm thinking of exiting my company, who should I talk to? That's the guy. And where this came from for me initially, you know, I talked about how I would do this locally and everything else. I went to a meetup back probably 2008. A while back, like ages ago.
Yeah.
And I was at this meetup and, you know, I don't know if you're on meetup.com or anything like that, but I would get, I got an email from a group I joined that had a few hundred people in it. And a copyright attorney was going to be there giving a talk on the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. So online copyrights and stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. And it wasn't anything I had actually any like need for or anything like that. But I went anyway. It was a free event. I thought, why not? I'll hopefully learn something new. And if anything, they're going to have a little networking thing after the talk and I'll get to meet some people. It just seemed like a good thing. And then I went and I listened to this woman, Barbara, talk about all things digital copyrights, which I knew nothing about. And I never hired her, but a lot of my clients, who needed help with that kind of stuff. I just intuitively pointed them to her.
Yeah.
And it's that thing. Like, if you think about it, Barbara didn't have a connection to me at all, but I had a connection to this meetup group. And she basically said to them, I think I can help your audience, and here's how. And it wasn't, she didn't pitch anything. There was no, she just outlined this. She put on the, on every seat, a folder with the slide printouts and her business card in it. And that was it. It mm-hmm. wasn't like a big, heavy call to action. If I was her, I probably would have had some sort of way to get, like, actively get email addresses from the people,
right,
you know, in attendance, but she didn't. But I'm willing to bet that a lot of people there probably never hired her, which is fine. But I mean, how many of us know reputable, like, copyright attorneys? I mean, right. I don't, right?
Yeah.
But now I did, and she'd done enough to demonstrate to me something of value that showed, okay, she actually gets, like, how things work online, so that anytime, like, if I ever did need something like that she could offer, I would probably reach out to her, but I didn't. However, she got indirect work from us.
Right.
So that was kind of that formula, right? And that's what, that's effectively what we ended up doing, just on a, I think, a larger scale with my agency.
Yeah. Well, I love that you said sleeper agents, because that's kind of what it sounds like. You talked about planting seeds. It's like you're, you know, in going to the banking conference and doing all this stuff, you're essentially just littering a field with landmines. Yeah. and people, totally random people that, you know, you don't know or you've never met, are eventually going to walk to this field and they're going to step on one, you know, and suddenly they are your customer, because obviously referrals are the best type of, you know, in client services anyway. At least I've found referrals are the best. And, well, how do you get more referrals? Well, usually it's like, you just try to get the people you've already done work for to refer you. But it's really a kind of a genius way to get referrals, because it's like you're not necessarily selling to the people in that audience. I mean, you are, but you're not. That's not the goal. The goal is just making an impression on them so that their whole network, suddenly you become the guy they refer, you know, everyone that asks about X to. And that's really cool. And I guess the way that you would translate that to online stuff, whether it's courses or products or whatever, is instead of physical meetups, you know, like you said, you're guest posting, you're guest podcasting, you're putting out content in places, just other places, not your own website, but other places where people are going to see it, and essentially do the same thing that way. Is that how you would, like, translate that to? You could also, like, do webinars, things like that, you know, but all those methods would be ways of sort of doing that online versus in person.
I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, unfortunately, we can't put a gun in someone's head and say buy, right? So, like, we can talk about having systems for sales and everything else all we want, but at the end of the day, what it really was for me, and the best way I've heard it put, is it's a way of increasing your luck surface area.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, like, you have, say you have 10 customers, 10 clients, there's only so much random potential of those 10 potentially activating, right?
Right.
And saying, oh, you know, let's say past client, they're talking to somebody who, first of all, you're top of mind. So they're thinking, oh, like, this person I'm talking to could really benefit from Adam. There's limited potential there. But when you do what we did, and we eventually had 3,000 people just here in Southeast Virginia in our audience, on our list and so on, who we were always kind of inviting to future things, that increased, like, we never had 3,000 consulting clients ever, yeah, anything close to that, right? But we had a lot of people who...
You had 3,000 sales agents.
Exactly, right. And it was just about, like, you know, it's really just about saying if the typical referral formula is somebody happens to think, oh, this person I'm speaking with right now could benefit from this, like, Adam. That's great. But you can't... That might not be enough because you're only going to scale your client base so fast. But what this allows is it allows you to build up that referral network. And I hate that term, but that's kind of what it is.
Right.
That allows you to have a bigger surface area of potential, of luck potential, right?
Yeah.
That it's just, if you think about it on, like, an evolutionary term, right? Like, there's more bacteria there to propagate.
Right.
Like, there's more stuff. There's more seed stuff.
Yeah.
So that's basically what the strategy is. And that's why, you know, that's one thing I see consistently from people is who are quote unquote successful online is they tend to make themselves in as many places as possible, that the people that they're looking to attract are.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's just one, and that's again, why to go full circle. Why do we build in the open for that reason? Why do we do this for that reason? It's all about that.
Yeah, exactly. That makes total sense. I was going to say, so just to make it, I guess a lot of the people that listen, to this show, I would say are similar to me in that they're, self-employed, a lot of client work, some products, that kind of thing. But, I think a big part of the struggle is the starting, you know, it's getting started, especially when you're, you know, I know you don't like the term freelancer, but when you're a freelancer or you're a solo entrepreneur, an indiepreneur, whatever term you want to call it. And, maybe you're doing web design or you're trying to sell a product, whatever it is, it's just you and you're at the beginning and maybe you have this thing to sell now. But it's like, where would you start in like trying to find those places that you could maybe write an article or, guest podcast or, you know, almost kind of like, if you were sitting down at the beginning of the year, you know, like how would you plan out, for someone in that position, the marketing strategy, you know, like how am I going to find these places? And what I'm going to write about, you've already talked about some of this, but I'm just saying more specifically to a solo individual who isn't going to have the team of 11 and may not be able to do things to the scale that you were doing them. But, you know, I just feel like that getting started is always so that's always the hardest thing. Like getting up in the morning and getting your gym shoes on is way harder than the actual workout, you know? So
yeah.
It's like if you just get started, then so much happens. And so, I'm just curious where, how would you start in that position?
Okay. So, I can maybe in the show notes, I've got one of my most popular articles is how to start a freelance business that won't fail that I can link to.
Yeah,
But let me try to sum it up as best as I can. So a lot of us, I think want, things that don't require as much interaction. And what I mean by that is, like a lot of new freelancers might say, oh, I'm going to start blogging and maybe that'll get me customers or something. Right. What I would say is if you go back to, again, bounce rates online, like you're never going to go to a networking event and have 97% of people you talk to walk away 3 seconds into chatting with you. Right. Yeah. Whereas online, that's the reality.
Yeah.
So, what I tend to advocate people do is to, you know, most of us live in some place with a semblance of a business community.
Yeah.
And it would probably do you well, especially if you're selling services. You know, if you're selling a $10 ebook, probably doesn't make as much sense, but if you're selling, services, go there without the attitude of I'm going to go sell, and because but people there can smell a salesperson from a mile away.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you go there and you're generally just trying to help people. And, you know, you have some head knowledge that they don't. They have domain knowledge that you don't. What can you do through conversation to help each other out? You do that and you do something a little more intentional versus the like what doesn't work. You know, what a lot of people might try to do is some sort of like, I get your business card and then I send you an email like, hey, let's do lunch, which is a very weak call to action,
yeah. Right?
Or let's do coffee. And, you know, if you're anything good at what you do, you're not going to, you guard your time fairly well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So instead, a better thing is like, how can you enable them to be more successful? Because if you're just saying, I want to pick your brain over lunch, it's a very lopsided, one-sided.
Right.
Requests that you're asking, they don't owe you anything. Like, why would they do that?
Yeah.
So like a better thing is one thing you could do is do a lot of listening, maybe nothing at first, but over time, just start to think like, what is something that I'm capable of helping it with that I keep hearing or, you know, through discussion, keeps becoming a thing. And then maybe you don't even need to necessarily have it, but you could do something like if you want to be a little more intentional, what I might do nowadays, again, I didn't know this back then, but I might do something like, you know, hey, I'm actually working on a, say you're a designer who, I don't know, helps e-commerce companies or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're meeting with somebody and they happen to be selling online, which, you know, many of them might have a sales website or something like that. Most of them probably do. You could say, you know, I'm actually working on kind of a local group of people mm-hmm. who are interested in this kind of stuff. And I'm also curating different articles that I read since I'm in this space day in and day out that are around, you know, how can you sell more online, like through, you know, and I'm basically putting together this local audience, this local group of people who care about this kind of stuff, who want to sell more online. And would you mind if, when I get back, if I just add you as a member of this group? And again, you're going to get almost probably 100% opt-in rate, which is right. You will never get online no matter how amazing you are at whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, you do that and you get a handful of people. And the process I've seen that works well is, let's say, you know, you're reading Hacker News, you're reading your different sites. And I think you mentioned this earlier, Adam, but like a lot of us don't take for granted how much more we know than the average person about random stuff that we are into, like podcasting, let's say.
Yeah.
And one formula that works well is, you know, if you don't want to write your own content yet, you could just, as you find interesting articles, you could send it to this fledgling list and say, you know, hey, I just read this article. Here's a link. Three big things that stuck out to me about it, this, this, and this. And then the call to action, if you will, would say something like, you know, I'd love to hear what you think when you wrap up reading the article. Just shoot me a quick reply and tell me something that you got out of it or something. And that could lead to a sales discussion potentially.
Yeah.
But what that does is it allows you to spark conversations at scale as that audience grows, right? But it keeps you front and center, keeps you front of mind. And then later on, you can start writing your own content instead of just sharing other people's. Yeah. You can write your own. And it's really hard to write articles without knowing anyone actually reading this,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
But by doing it this way, when you know you've got, even if it's like 30 people or something like that, you know, hey, you know, instead of, I don't actually have someone else's article to share with you, I have one of my own that I just put together, same thing. You know, I'd love for you to share it with anyone you think could benefit from it. And, you know, that's a really good way to kind of self-propel this. And if you can do things like, if you're sending out emails that are related to that intersection of business and tech or whatever it is you do, and your call to actions are not, hey, if you need, you know, help with web design, email me or something like that,
right,
which is a weak call to action. But instead you're saying, what did you get out of this? What are you going to do? If you just spent 5 minutes reading this article, what is your next step as a result of what you learned in that article? And that can help you, in a way, at scale, generate interest that, you know, they say, I reply and I say, so, you know, one thing I learned is that, you know, crappy headlines can, you know, whatever, impact sales or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the response I might get from that is, so tell me a bit more, like the headline, the copy you have now on your site, how did that come to be? And then I'd reply saying, well, you know, I just kind of put it up there, and that could lead to potentially an engagement.
Right.
But you're able to spark these discussions, you know, at scale, and over time, as you keep doing this, as you keep putting yourself out there, creating content, maybe leveraging this content you created, mm-hmm. so that when you go to, whether it's a meetup group or something like that, I could say, you know, hey, I've been working with a lot of people locally for a while who I've been talking about how to help people get more conversions online. Been getting a lot of results. Here are some of the people. Some of these are members of Chamber of Commerce who are, you know, or kind of have been on the receiving end of this. Here's kind of what they said in their own words. Do you think that your audience, whatever they call it, like their membership,
sure,
would be interested in hearing, if I put together something a little more formal on this, hearing a really to the point presentation that will, by the end of it, will help them achieve X or help them understand X.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff. And that, like, just over time starts to, you know, grow bigger and more powerful. And
so your method, you know, I mean, even if you're, everything you do is online and it's all online, for you, it still starts with,
same formula. Yeah.
I mean, what I'm saying is it still starts with, your local location, real people in a room, in a meetup or something. That's still the strategy. Because that's really interesting. I find that fascinating because that's not what most people. I feel like there's a lot of techniques around, you know, list building and webinars and funnels and things. And like, you're honestly one of the first people that I've ever talked to who is espousing, you know, go to a physical in-person group, you know? And so even now in 2017, even if your product is online, everything's online, you're saying still a way to start is by going and meeting people in person at local meetups and groups.
I think a lot of the online only stuff tends to seem a lot more sexier. Not agree.
Yeah.
But it's one of these things that the easiest way I've found to reliably sell or convert or whatever else has been to do it first through conversation.
Yeah.
And it's a bit easier offline, I think, whether that be over the phone or in person or whatever else, than it is to do the, I'm going to throw up a landing page and hope it works and cross my fingers.
Yeah.
So I'm not like, I just think it's more reliable
yeah.
to do it offline first. And I'm not saying that should be your end goal. Like you should not be doing the, you know, hanging out at local networking events long-term and making, I mean, you could, but that shouldn't be like the repeatable long-term thing you have in place. It's just a way to kickstart things into action.
Yeah.
It's a way to get these discussions going and learning as much as you can about how you're able to help people and so on. And then, because a lot of people, if you're just going and saying, I'm going to hang my shingle up and I do X, I code, I design, I do whatever, you're only going to get people who actually know that's what they need,
yeah.
which isn't many.
Well, it's a great idea though. It's a great process or a great way to get started. That's specifically what I was curious about, because I know that starting is always one of the hardest parts. And even at this point in my career, which is, you know, a decade in, I wouldn't have thought of local in-person meetups. Like, that seems so like 90s, you know what I mean?
It does, yeah.
But at the same time though, what you're saying makes total sense. Like, you do have, even from a purely selfish standpoint, like you said, no one's going to walk away in 3 seconds, where that happens all the time on your website. And it is actually, now that I think about it, it is a great way to actually help people, because I have a perfect example of what you're talking about. I was on the phone a month ago. I had to get renter's insurance or something. I had to get something like that. We just moved. And I just Googled, you know, I'm in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So I Googled and found some guy. It was a CPA. I don't know. It was something. Anyway, I called him and we got in a conversation, and he found out that I used to work for Apple, and he was like, oh man, you know, I'm all PC, but I'm so sick of it. I want to switch the whole office to Macs, but I just have no idea how to do that. Well, actually, you know, I make websites and podcasts and, you know, online content. I'm an online content person, but I do know how to do what he needs there. And it was like, it hit me that, like, well, this is a great way to just help him out, you know, tell him what gear to buy. And even if I need to drive over there and set up his, you know, Wi-Fi for him or whatever, suddenly then, you know, you're a person that, you know, he feels like he owes, you know, like, in some way. And, right. And so it's not about web design, but you can see how it could very easily get there, you know, just from a purely, you know, clinical sales perspective, you could see how those dots could connect. And
absolutely. And it's not an overnight thing. I mean, and that's, I think, the issue people take rightfully so with this, is that it's not. And that's why I think we love these marketplaces, and we love the, even though they're generally crap, like the Upworks and stuff, where it's like, here's people with money right now who need X. I can go and maybe turn, like, this is a long game approach.
Yeah.
But it's much better in the end.
Oh, it's so much better. Because, I mean, that's the thing, is like, you get to, if you don't go the long game, you get to where, you know, like, I'm 37 and, you know, I've definitely only in recent years started thinking and playing more of the long game. Earlier on, I never went to those kind of sites to get work, but it was much more about, just making a lot of money and having fun because I was self-employed and I could do whatever I want. But then you get to a place where you start to get older and you're thinking, man, am I going to still be doing this when I'm 57? You know, and it's like, where is this going? Like this isn't going anywhere. It's just the same, the same weeks repeated over and over again. And so, it's so much better to do it where, you know, you wind up, you know, middle age with something that has a future to it and not just something that can fall apart at any moment. So, that makes total sense, I think.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it works. It's better for you, better for them, I think, overall.
Well, so that was a great intro. Now we can get into the show. no, I'm kidding. I did not mean to just dive into a sales masterclass there, but I do want to. I remember you from way back in. You know, I remember when PlanScope was out and when that was your thing, and I remember when Double Your Freelancing was just a landing page, and then it was an ebook and. Then it was a book and then it's become a course and it's just gotten bigger and bigger. And, right now are you, and before all that you had your agency and you've talked a lot about that. Like I've followed you on Twitter for years and kind of read things from the sidelines, but, at this current moment, do you still have a team and employees or are you doing the solo thing or, where are things now, like business wise?
Good question. So with Double Your Freelancing, I'm the only employee, but I have a few people helping me on a contract basis.
Okay.
But it's definitely, it's the breadwinner. It's still your main reliable thing right now. Evergreen. Yeah. It's the thing that pays all the bills.
Okay.
But with Right Message, we're doing this. I've got a co-founder who helped me start the company and then we're actually currently hiring people. So, it's a different beast in the sense that we need success people. We need developers. We need like DYF is mostly WordPress with some off the shelf stuff glued together content and systems. This new thing is of a different scope. The Double Your Freelancing is very much a hands off lifestyle business at this point, but it still works because it tends to be evergreen content that doesn't really go old. But yeah, the new challenge is Right Message, which is, like I said, a much different beast. And I'm sure 6 months, a year from now, it's going to be,
Is Right Message, is it a SaaS product or a one-time purchase thing? Or I don't really know anything about it, but,
it's a SaaS. Okay. Yeah. So it's subscription and, it's doing well. Actually very well so far. So
what is it? Just out of curiosity, like I said, I haven't seen anything about it. So
what it does is it makes it really easy to personalize your website based on who's looking. If you've ever used a tool like an Optimizely where you can just click and set up A/B tests, the idea here is you can say things like, if they are a customer of mine, because you know that because you tag them in your email marketing app, or they've done this, or they're in this segment, or they came from this website, or they viewed these pages, or they're reading this kind of content, maybe change your call to actions, maybe change what you're promoting, maybe change the sales copy on a product page based off of if they've already bought product A from you or not. You know, like you're able to really simply change imagery, testimonials. You can make it so like if you're a web designer and you're viewing one of our products, all the testimonials you see are from other web designers. So it's basically about making the websites that our customers have more relevant to the people using them.
That's really cool.
On those websites.
Is there a landing page or anything for that yet? I'm assuming there is.
Rightmessage.com. Yeah, rightmessage.com. We've actually got a pretty we're out of the gate. I mean, we've got quite a few paying customers now, and we're working on self sign up and onboarding and everything. So
okay, Right Message as in RIGHT message.
Yep, okay. .com.
Cool. Yeah. I originally, when you said it first, like an hour ago, I was thinking like WRITE, like Right Message. And so
that doesn't
bring anything up. So, okay, cool. So this is, it's interesting. I've talked to a bunch of people who, you know, they've made courses, they've, had sort of a content business and are now moving into, you know, SaaS companies and things like that. I don't know if that's a trend or whether, you know, they just had a great idea or something. But for you is, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I'm 37. I've got three kids. I feel like I'm in web years, like dog years, I'm pretty ancient at this point.
I'm right behind you. So basically right behind you.
So. I was going to say, I don't know where you are in this, thing, but, do you feel like, is Right Message like your future? Do you feel like this is the thing that you're going to build and the next, you know, the next big chunk of your life is going to be focused on and you'll, you know, or is it just, I mean, obviously you're not going to say, man, I don't really care much about it, but I mean, you know, is it like the future for you? Do you feel like
this is the next, yeah, this is the, I mean, obviously the, W Freelancing does well.
Yeah.
It does consistently. It does well, but this is the new challenge. This is the focus. Yeah. For me now, I mean, we've got, we obviously have future things queued up for W Freelancing, but my day-to-day attention is on Right Message now.
Yeah.
And it's really just cause it's a bigger enterprise than W Freelancing ever could be. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, it's also a very, it's a much different challenge.
Yeah.
And I started out on software, and I love software. It was always just more of a struggle before because I didn't really know what I was doing. And I've learned a lot over the years that is helping me with the growth side.
Yeah.
Making Right Message, like it's already significantly more successful than PlanScout Burper was, and it's just a few months old. So
are you? Obviously, I'm sure you're excited, but you're an interesting person in that you have done a lot of the different business models out there. You know, I mean, you've had a service based agency, not just you know freelancing. Like you had employees, and you had a high overhead you had to pay, and you've created a very successful, you know, content business that is basically just you. And now you're starting a SaaS and it's, you've had one before and this is going to require hiring more people again and doing all that. Do you prefer the business with employees and, you know, the bigger scale, everything's bigger. Do you get more of a rush out of that than just doing your own thing by yourself? Or do you prefer one or the other, I guess is what I'm saying.
I do prefer the former, although I'll tell you that with the issue with the agency was, again, we had high overhead, and we're going to have high overhead also with Right Message. But the difference is with the agency, all the revenue was transactional, mm-hmm. whereas this is I'm much more comfortable budgeting because if you think about it, I mean, it's a reverse SaaS isn't the right way of putting it. But if you have fixed expenses with employees, and you have fixed income more or less when you have subscription revenue.
Yeah.
But when you have, like by definition, most consulting projects are transactional, which means you have variable income. And the way to solve that, the way to make it more or less fixed is solid marketing funnels that bring in like what we ended up doing. But I sleep much better when I know that we have this much, you know, X number of different customers paying Y. The likelihood that all of them are going to quit overnight is basically an impossibility.
Yeah.
Whereas with consulting, when you have three active clients who pay your 100K plus a month expenses, if one of them fires you, which could happen,
yep.
That is a big deal, right?
Yeah.
So,
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a huge deal. And that's one reason why I have never. Well, I just, when I started to go down that road and hire people about 5 years ago, and it, I was starting to turn into just a people manager, and that was not what I wanted to do. And everything was just like all the headaches you have as a solo indie, you know, freelancer. You think they'll go away with more people and more money coming in, but it amplifies all the stresses.
It does.
You know?
Exactly.
And I was like, these aren't the stresses I want. I prefer the stresses of just me and, you know, needing to support my family and not having the burden of other people's families as well on me.
Well, you've never had, I like to say you don't have actual expenses until you have an employee.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you said, it's the burden of you're now affording their livelihood. It's much different if you forget to pay your mortgage or something, yeah. right? But when somebody doesn't have money, that's a big deal.
But
they're also tend to be pretty expensive.
Yeah, I know. And that's that too, is that it's just everything's bigger, not just the good stuff. All the bad stuff is bigger too. So it's right. difficult. But right. so at the moment though, is double your freelancing is still your, as you said, the bread and butter. That's what is paying, you know, that's what's paying you right now.
Correct. Yes. It's doing about $1 million a year now. And
Wow.
It's doing well.
That's insane. Yeah. Man. That's crazy. That's great.
Yeah, it does well. And we're obviously working on some things to keep that going, even though my day-to-day involvement will be significantly less. Mm-hmm. But we have some automation things that we're working on that'll keep that kind of maintained ideally.
Well, it's more than just a course and stuff now. It's a community and all that. So
it's 42,000 people right now. A few months back, we crossed 10,000 total customers lifetime.
Yeah.
And we've got our main course is Double Your Freelancing Rate, but we have a few others that also get sales.
Yeah.
There's
a recurring revenue model to this because of the community aspect as well, or is it
no?
It's not.
No.
It's just a one-time purchase.
Right, but we do have some people paying on installments, which add like fake MRR to
right.
it. It's pretty much transactional, but we have significant and consistent lead volume coming in that it's more or less predictable at this point.
Yeah. And that comes from the various, you know, those various sales funnels and things that you have built.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Well, man, that's crazy. I know of, that's a lot of money to be bringing in off of one, I guess you said there are other courses in there, but, that's your main thing. But then again, I mean, you've been doing this for, I mean, I remember seeing Double Your Freelancing out there, like what, 2010 even?
Yeah. So, I mean, PlanScope started in 2011.
Okay.
I guess I've been doing this 6 years online, and really DYF started as a content marketing initiative to get customers for, I mean, if you remember, all my content used to be on the PlanScope blog.
Yeah.
And then I made the switch and, it's just one of those things where it slowly evolved into what it is now, but I've been doing, let's just say I haven't had an employer since 2006. So I've been self-employed for 11 years now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's crazy. Yeah, I'm restarting everything right now because I've been on my own since 2009, and then like I said, with the podcasting course and stuff, things I kind of burned out and got an offer from Apple, which I felt like you just don't turn down that kind of offer, and but it turns out you do turn down that kind of offer. So
yeah.
That was kind of it wasn't a mistake. I definitely learned some things, but I learned mostly that I like doing my own thing, regardless of as low as the lows are, the highs are so much better. So it's just worth it. So anyway, though, I had like a whole list of things that I wanted to get to with you because I've never actually had you on the show before. And but we ended up just talking about sales this whole time. But I still think it was super relevant and super helpful. So, you know, I don't know, maybe we'll do a second one sometime, but
always do a follow up or something.
Yeah. But, I imagine that I'll get questions, back, with this because it was so practical. I don't know if you've ever listened to this show in the past, but it tends to not be super practical. It tends to be more existential. And, but this was great. This was like a little mini, master class in sales or something. Like a lot of techniques here I think would be super helpful. So thanks for taking the time to do it, man. This was great.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Adam.
I told you. What'd I tell you? I mean, I tried to steer clear of the practical, but Brennan just overflowed with little truth bombs, little nugget bombs, right? Isn't that what the podcasters say? Anyway, It was great. Thanks for doing it, Brennan. It was awesome. All right, guys, thegentlymad.com. Everything The Gently Mad is at thegentlymad.com. I'm currently in the middle of rebuilding the site, so it's under construction at the moment, and I apologize for the mess. All right, but it's there. You can go there, get what you need, subscribe, all that stuff. I would love it if you would subscribe. I would love if you would leave me a review in iTunes. That really helps other people find the show. I'm not going to stop saying this. I'm going to just keep saying it. So you might as well just do it, right? Right? Okay. But it really would help me. And as I said in the intro, I'm really glad you're here. I'm glad you're listening. I need this. I'm doing it again because I need it. I missed it, and I missed you guys. So thanks for listening. It does mean a lot to me. And that's it. That's it for this week. Next week will be Morgan Haynes, and you don't want to miss that. So don't. All right? I'm counting on you. All right. See you next time.
I'm sort of just an old guy with a big tongue. I'm just a big old tongue old man. That's all that is. That's sort of, how many words am I at?